You ready? Committee will come to order. Good morning, everyone. Mr. Houston, if you will take silent roll, please. A couple of reminders to start off. Again, we are going to be audio streamed live on Idaho Public Television. Your microphones are on when the light's on, and please use the switch at the bottom to turn them off when you're not using them, so we can avoid as much background noise as possible. I'd remind the committee again that our purpose is to make some realistic projections. Obviously, if we're too high, then we're forced to look at holdbacks in the next budget year. If we're too low, we cut programs that we don't need to cut. We're going to make some changes in schedule to accommodate the governor's press conference at 9 a.m. We're going to try to compress Mr. Maynard and Mr. Dietrich. We'll take a break at 9, be back here between 9:15 and 9:20, and then proceed on from there. We will not take our break at 9:50, and hopefully then we'll be back on schedule. Mr. Co-Chairman, any comments this morning? Let's get started then. First up, Mr. Maynard, investment manager from Percy. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Senator. Chairman's and everyone for this morning. You are probably fortunate to have me compressed. That's probably all in your best interest. I heard about that last night. So last night and this morning, I put together a narrative presentation of the full slideshow. Forgive any informality of that. It was done adequately quickly. It helps if you have the voice of Morgan Freeman in the background as it's being presented to yourself. It comes across much better. And I will try to get through my materials in about 15 to 20 minutes so you have some time for questions and then give Mr. Dietrich his full time. So that's why I have this up here. I'm not expecting a call. I'm trying to keep myself on time here. Last year, when I was here before you, this is a much better time to be here, at least for me. Thank you very much. I enjoyed this tremendously. Last year when I was here, as you may remember, it was a tough situation to describe. Although it was actually a fairly easy capital market for the year long to predict. Right now, the situation is actually relatively easy to describe and much tougher to predict. But what I want to go through is I'm going to go through a quick overview of what I'm going to say, go through the major topics, and concentrate on a couple of the issues to try to get it in the time available. You may be wondering on slide one what that is. I assume most of you know what that is. That is the Malad Gorge, pretty much about the place where the freeway goes over. And the reason I bring this up, to me, this is a great metaphor for where we are and where we've been. Because the fact of the matter is, when I first moved here for good in about 20 years ago, we have a place in Utah and drive that freeway down there a lot. And the first time we drove it from Boise, driving around 75, 80 miles an hour, all of a sudden on a nice flat land, beautiful, gorgeous, rolling, all of a sudden, boom, you go past the gorge, you go, what is that? And you're right past it. You look back, and it still kind of doesn't look like it's there. And the fact of the matter is, that's basically what we've gone through and where we are now. In other words, if you look back across the gorge and say, well, it doesn't look like the land changed much. If you look back right now as to what we've gone through in the last year and a half, you look back, we're about at the levels we were. Things don't look like they've changed. The markets are fairly valued for the conditions we're in. And if you go to the second slide, what this slide shows is the value and the returns of the Percy Fund since December of 07. I listened to Mike's great presentation yesterday, as you may remember. And actually, that's going to make it easier, by the way, for me to go through things quickly. A lot of the slides that I have about the conditions are many of what Mike showed you. So I'm just going to be able to go right through them. So I have, you heard them yesterday afternoon. But December 07, as Mike indicated, was when the recession was officially called. They went to the tape, called it retrospectively of December. And that's the returns of the fund since then. And as you can tell, we were in a recession. We had kind of in March, April, May of last year, there was kind of a false hope that it was over. End of the summer started to go back down again. Around September, we were in late recession, still hope. And then we hit the Lehman bankruptcy, and all heck broke loose. And then it was the steepest drop in living memory in the markets. It was terrible, as you all know. And we bottomed out in March 9th, 09, down 43% from where we started out. We were down to $7.5 billion. And then March 9th occurred, which is, as you remember, there wasn't anything particularly special about that day. Citigroup and a few banks said, my gosh, we might have made a profit the first quarter. And since then, it's been the most spectacular rise in the markets in history, in Percy history. We're up 42% through the end of the year. By the way, our calendar year number was where we were up plus 23. Fiscal year to date, we're up 17. Last year, we lost 16%. That was the worst fiscal year loss in Percy history, 16.0. It matched the worst fiscal year loss. I was hoping by today I could say, never mind. But we're over 12 basis points, about 12/100ths of 1% below that. This rise up has been stunning. We're up above $10.6 billion as of today. In a much less than a nine-month period of time, we've made over $3 billion. I'm probably the happiest guy in town. I've been the happiest guy in town. I've had to watch it because I must admit that was the most optimistic I've heard Mike in a number of years. So I'm hoping that I can be happy with some other people in the next number of months. I'm hoping I'm a precursor for what's going on. I was mentioning to the good senator earlier on that I think I discovered the only advantage of getting old is that my midterm memory shot. All I can remember is the last 9 months, and it's been the best it's ever been. By the way, I just want you to be aware, you'll be hearing stories from other states about how terrible things are there and whatever. Funds that are relatively straightforward investment funds like ourselves, like the endowment fund, whatever, have done great in this environment. Funds that were much more sophisticated, taller, more people, all that good stuff, they tended to lose 10 to 15% more. They haven't been able to pick up this amount. So not only are their funds structured so they're in more trouble than we are, their returns are still about 15 to 20% behind where funds like the EFMD and ourselves are. So there's been a few funds like ourselves, like Nevada and some other ones that have survived as well. But if you look, what this means is we're above where we were when Lehman went bankrupt. If you look back, we're about where we were towards where the end of the late recession was. And that is economically about where we are, too. We were going down. We were in basically a recessionary phase, had an economic heart attack, dropped into that gorge, bounced back to the other side, and we're ending up that late recession early stages of recovery. And that is basically the overview of where we are. That pretty much encapsulates where we are and what type of capital market environment we are. Early stages of recovery out of recession, which tends to be relatively good for the capital markets, particularly public equities. I don't think this is going to be as good as the last year, but it's not going to be one of those disastrous, miserable, things. Now, there's two major problems I'm going to be talking about. One is just like the heart attack recovery victim that looks back where they are, we're very, very fragile. We are subject to a great deal of potential relapse. Secondly, we were put on life support by the governments of the world, not just the U.S. And the question is, how is that life support going to be withdrawn? assuming those two things don't go bad on us, then it'll be a good year for the capital markets. Somewhat double-digit returns for public equities. I don't think government bonds will be that well. I think it'll be tough for alternatives, private real estate lags. But generally, I have hopes. Now, so basically the overview, which I'll do in about another 10 minutes, is where are we now? Again, we're recovering from a recession that was interrupted by basically an economic heart attack. And now we're looking back and saying, yeah, that was miserable, but we're where we were. But we are starting, by the way, out of this recession, as you saw from Mike's Ferguson's slide today. This is the deepest hole we've started out of in living memory. We're basically treading water right above our eyebrows. Our nose isn't above water yet. And the question is can we get our nose above water before some other people start going under who need financing and things of that nature? What's the major issue over the next year or two? How does the government extricate itself from the extensive internet intervention it's done? Who's going to lend in its place and who's going to spend in its place? And them getting out, traditionally it's been easier for government to get in and support an economy. It's traditionally very difficult for them to get out and withdraw the punch bowl away from the party too soon. I mean, that's been a more difficult one, and those are the issues. What are the major dangers? We got two. In my mind, we have two. One is clearly fragile economics, and if we get some rising interest rates, people stop lending, people can't get loans at the appropriate times, the recovering heart attack victim has an issue. The second one, in my mind, is China. The rest of the world and us are really, really dependent on continued Chinese growth. They're very, very dependent on, and you go around the world and talk to everybody, nobody can imagine China slowing down to a growth rate below 5%. If you see China's growth rate drop down to 5 to 6%, I'll help you dig that rabbit hole to hide it, because that's the one thing that everybody expects. What's the current state of the capital markets? We just ended a great year. That was a wonderful year. But the levels of the valuations, they're fairly valid right now. You go across the capital market, every single capital market appears to me to be fairly valued. And that includes private, public, values in between. Some look a little bit better, some look a little bit worse. But the fact of the matter is, whether or not we're going to have a better than expected year only depends on whether corporate profits are better than expected, which means the economy gets a bit better than expected previously. And so next year, we'll probably have better than average public equity market returns. We'll have moderate to poor returns in the rest of the capital markets, the bonds, real estate, and alternatives. Where we are now, I'm not going to be going through these slides. These are what you saw yesterday with Mike. You can see, by the way, but just as you see these charts, just keep thinking the Malad Gorge. I mean, it's that same sort of biggest drop in hole in memory and then climbing out the other side. Consumer spending's recovering, still at historic low levels. By the way, that these little peaks you see, that these are quarterly consumer spending numbers. The peaks are Christmas. Now you can see why everybody's so excited about the Christmas numbers. It doesn't show the current Christmas numbers. The current Christmas numbers should be up slightly below the level of the other Christmas numbers. So you can see that bounce back is huge. Manufacturing is recovering and expanding. You see the Malad Gorge thing there again. Epic collapse in production. Mike had this chart yesterday in a different format. This is the capacity utilization. Economy is bouncing back, but it's still at the lowest level it's been. I mean, this is why a lot of people, things like this, the jobless rate and the capacity utilization, it's why people think inflation, if it's a concern, is a long way out. There's a lot of capacity out there. We have a lot of capacity to go. Corporate profits are rebounding, but from historically low levels. This is the Russell 3000 since October of 2007. This is the U.S. stock market. Since its peak in October of 2007. You can see the drop down. From the March lows to now, you can see it's up 70%. And many people say that alone means it has nowhere, it it's got to stop. But the fact of the matter is we had dropped 60%, which means we have another 25% to go to get back to where we were. Again, we're bouncing back, but we're at late recession levels. If things progress well, strong, not too fast, not too slow, you know, the Goldilocks sort of recovery, there's no reason we can't gain that back over a period of time, remembering the fragility and things of that nature. Current condition, lots of room to grow. We're still close to that cliff. Everybody's still fragile. And we're all feeling the effects of the current conditions. I am going to skip this only because I went over it last year. It's in the narrative. The big issue is still who's going to lend, who's going to spend. For the most part, 60% of the world's lending capability disappeared because it was in that shadow finance system, not regular banks. It's like 60% of the world's banks went under. People have to step into place, and the people that are left, as you know from hearing from everybody else, are still reluctant to come back in and do things. Who's going to spend? Well, the U.S. consumer is 70% of the U.S. GDP. And the fact of the matter is that we're 25% of the world GDP. We spend about $1 trillion a year. Now, our savings rate is, as you heard Mike say yesterday, is probably coming up between that 5 and 10%. Remember, that's $500 billion to $1 trillion of spending that has to come from somewhere. We've dropped down that amount. And the Chinese, it takes 13 Chinese consumers, 11 or 13 Chinese consumers, to equal one of us. So the fact of the matter is, even if they spend more, it's a nice trend, it can't make it up that quickly. So there's still a lot of room left. And so what had happened was that, this is a savings rate number again, the government actions were basically designed to move into those two areas. One, to say, we'll do the lending in the place of the people that disappeared, and we'll do a bit of the spending in the place of the disappeared. And what that happened, these are the five major actions that the Federal Reserve basically did. They dropped the interest rates. They guaranteed short-term lending. They directly injected reserves into the system called quantitative easing. On the spending side, the U.S. government did TARP, injected capital directly into banks, and directly increased the stimulus and purchasing. These are the Fed interest rates. I don't remember Mike doing this yesterday. The only thing I would note, if you'll notice, this is the Federal Reserve interest rate from 1990 to 2011. You see it going down in the low 90s, coming up in the late 90s, dropped by Greenspan in reaction to the first recession of the noughties or the knots or whatever. Kept low, that's where people are complaining, kept low too long. The one thing I'll note, it's now common wisdom that Bernanke kept interest rates too low too long. But if you'll notice, as soon as he became chair, the interest rate went back up to that 5% level. There is still a school of thought out there that that was too fast for that. He hit the brakes too hard, and that the U.S. economy is too subject, and the world economy is too subject now to levered interest rates. And if that 5% number, nominal number, was actually about a 3%, maybe even a 4% real interest rate, as many people said, actually that was the cause of the great collapse, not necessarily. I'm not too sure who's right, but it's one thing to note, when they start raising interest rates again, I'm going to be a little bit nervous because I don't know who's right on that argument. And you'll probably see us rebalance then and do things of that nature, but it's going to be interesting. I won't go into the injection of reserves into the system or the government purchasing. That's in the narrative. Wild cards, as I said before, if China slows down below 6%, start getting out your trenching tools, major inflation or deflation, I just don't see either of those being something that's going to be a major issue for the next 3 years or so. Just too much capacity out there and still too much. We're still too close to the collapse for the governments to pull away too much of the support. Dollar collapse or spiking long-term interest rates. You know, I'm perfectly willing to believe the dollar is going to have a crisis. If someone could please tell me a crisis against what? It's not going to be the yen. Europe is a basket case at times, and there's no other major currency left, and everybody else pegs it to the dollar, and China's not about to free float their currency. So I just have a tough time seeing where China's going to be there. Final 5 minutes on the basic capital market. One thing I always want to remember, and I always emphasize, it's not the state of the economy. It's not the absolute value of the securities that make the difference. It's not the current issues that are happening. The markets run on expectations and whether expectations are right or wrong, not what the actual conditions are. It runs on relative values, not absolute values in and of themselves. What's the worth of a stock stream versus a government bond interest rate? Government bond interest rate goes up. I don't care how nice the company is. The stock's going to go down because its relative value has gone down because the safer investment's gone up. Remember, growth is not enough. Growth compared to what? And it's corporate profits that drive security values for equities and bonds, not the general economy. So, what are the growth expectations now? Right now, for the next number of years, this shows the growth expectations of economists for personal consumption and real GDP. And basically, you can see right now, people are expecting moderate growth out for the next year. If we get better than expected growth, or higher than expected consumption, you will see a reaction in the capital markets. It may not be the reaction you think. Because the first thing that's going to happen, if all of a sudden you see that, and it happened the last time the jobless rates went down, we're in this type of market now. Growth explodes twice as high as what people expect. My guess is you may see the markets go down. Why? Because now people are going to expect the Federal Reserve to jack up interest rates a lot quicker than they expected. They expect interest rates to be low for a long time now. They may expect that to come in. The dollar will go up because the interest rates are up. Dollar goes up, corporate profits may go down. This was the reaction of the markets when you saw the better-than-expected job numbers last time. So don't take simply because we do better than expected growth. What we want is moderately better than expected growth, where the Fed's not going to step on the interest rates. That's the type of interplay and the type of market we're in. Right now, I won't go through this one. I explain it in the narrative. But right now, all relative values are well within the fair value of what they were over a previous periods of time. There's nothing that really jumps out at you as being overly valued, except for the cash real rate return, which is outside of the one standard deviation amount. And that's because of artificial interest rates. The next three slides. The only point being made here, these are the common ideas of what value is and what value isn't. This basically makes going to make the point, yeah, values are mediocre, but you can't tell what values by themselves, what's going to happen with the markets. Right here, I helpfully put in yellow the year where it looked like the best values were there, and in year A is when they looked like they were most overvalued. It turned out when values looked the best, the next year, that was October of 2007, the market crashed. When they looked like they were the most overvalued, it turned out to be a pretty good year for 2 years. And last year, values looked good, turned out to be a good year. Now they kind of look okay. So I wouldn't take, if anybody comes up to you and says, values are X, Y, or Z, and gives you one or two numbers, listen politely and kick them out of the room. This is why this profession drives you crazy. Last year, I won't go through, traditionally I go through what I did in the previous year and say where it was right or wrong. Last year, pretty much on the mark, really blew Europe. I thought Europe would be a disaster. It turned out to be pretty good. Otherwise, things worked out pretty much in line with, these were the slides I gave you last year and I put the actual numbers. This year, I think it's probably going to be another, and this is my last two slides. This year's probably going to be another good year. Double-digit equity and single-digit corporate bond returns. I think there's going to be poor government bond and real estate returns. And moderate, that means high single-digit, maybe low double-digit, private equity, hedge fund, and commodity returns. The assumptions I am making for the upcoming year are that the Fed's going to continue the low rates, it's going to keep that balance sheet high, it's going to continue that one big injection of reserves, it's not going to grow it much anymore, the dollar's going to trade in a wide range, but there's not going to be a collapse, lacking something to collapse against. The jobless rate is going to be steady, it's not going to drop by much. Europe is going to be restrained by its periphery. It's ugly in Ireland, Spain, Greece, Eastern Europe. The central bank there is going to be very constrained about that. Asia's going to slow the stimulus. They're going to keep the currency pegged to the dollar, and they're happy as can be over there. So they're doing great. Our economy is going to expand by cost cutting. I think corporate profits are going to expand much, much more because they didn't enter this crisis in a bad shape on their balance sheet, and they have just dropped costs to the floor. So they're really levered. Any sort of growth at all is going to drop right to the bottom line on profits. A lot of that is expected, however, in the current valuations. And capital markets are going to react to those expanding profits. It's still too much damage. We're still in too deep a hole for us to get back to the even point where we were in October of 2007. That damage, in my mind, is going to be taking a couple of years to unwind. We've gotten the big push of people no longer being afraid. We're going to drop right into the abyss, but I think from now on it's going to be that kind of weird interplay that you see. You can read the major changes. It's pretty much what I saw last year. I put it in red where I see probably the major changes from last year, but I'll let that go. And I'll take questions at this point.
Thank you, sir. Questions to the committee. Senator LaFaver.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question has, thank you very much for this. I always enjoy it. But my question has to do with wages and, you know, in looking at that 70% that's consumer spending and where wages in your mind might play into some of the potential for that recovery in consumer spending. And I guess small businesses would have to play in there well as well too, because and there's so many that are struggling right now and we've lost them. And, you know, those are wages for those individuals.
Mr. Mayor.
To the chair. I liked Mike's explanation yesterday. I think that's where I'd first start off. He showed you a slide yesterday afternoon about the fact that the wages, jobs, are always kind of a lagging indicator, although wages tend to go up a little bit earlier than job recovery because people work the people they have harder before they add people on. The dynamic of job recovery on the capital markets is confusing even the market participants in terms of a predictive value. This is one of those things you can say, here's the headline on jobs 2 months from now, and half the people would get the direction wrong. Because it's an odd, for example, why are jobs a lagging indicator rather than a leading indicator? Well, the reason is it's not so much the fact that it's the people that are getting jobs that are spending that does the spending. It's the people that already have jobs stop worrying about losing them. And then they'll go out and shop and go to the malls and borrow money and buy houses. So that's the impact in the later recovery, plus the expectations of businesses that people will now start spending more. They start building up their inventories. So it's that sort of reaction. So this is one of those areas that what may be looking good for the economy, you look at the capital markets and they look like they're perversely reacting. So my gut reaction right now is that we are on that, if jobs peak, and also too, the bigger the jobless rate, the lower the wage growth, the better the corporate profits, the better it is for people who hold equities and bonds, because it's better corporate profits. That's why, you know, so in that sense, you have kind of a, you need enough people spending to buy the products, but you don't need enough people working in order to draw the labor costs high for the capital markets. So it's going to be an interesting, we're in one of those periods right now, it's choppy waters with regard to how you react to that sort of material.
Follow up.
Just to follow that up, I just wonder if you ever do track relative value of wages against what happens, you know, in the economy as a whole. Because individual wages, I know you're looking at the number of workers as much as anything in terms of gross wages nationally, but I'm looking at the value of wages for individual workers and whether that is stifling some of the spending as well and has been, the level of personal debt, things like that. I think the savings rate has been really positive, but I'm just wondering if those wages generally, especially for a large segment of the population, which is fairly low level compared to, you know, I think past, but do you ever track that? Is that a concern?
Yes.
Mr. Major.
Yes, it is something that we look at. It tends to take on more importance to capital markets at different times than the others. We do look at it. The big question is wages for who, and this is a big debate as to if you're looking for spending to increase in the economy, is it better to give money to people who have to use it for food rather than people that have to use it to buy, add a thing to their yacht? And at different times, it's, you know, this is one of those areas that the last good argument I hear, I believe, because at different times it seemed the capital markets seem to react differently to that question. Wages in the U.S., the one thing I'm looking at right now is the average work week of existing workers. That seems to be expanding, which seems to be, to me, is a good sign, because that's the type of thing that happens, that people that are working, that are having their work week expanding, are saying, I may have my job for a year or two, and it's that sort of confidence level. Remember, everybody, I mean, few people know we're back to where we were before Lehman went bankrupt. I mean, just as a general thing, as a general economy or whatever. We're all reacting. The whole U.S. consumer, the whole U.S. job person, in my mind, is reacting like we all just had a heart attack. We're being very tentative. We're being very careful. We're still trying to cut down debt rather than borrow something. Things that would be seen as a great deal before, we're hesitant to reach out and grab, which individually is a wonderful thing, mind you. It's just a paradox of thrift. It's good to save. Individually, if everybody saves, nobody spends, nobody buys stuff, and nobody has a job. I mean, so we're in that kind of strange area.
Representative McGinn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Maynard, I appreciate your information. It's very interesting. Under your assumptions, you stated the belief that jobless rate will steady, not drop too much, as long as there is no major additional stimulus, and is that the correct understanding there?
Mr. Maynard.
Yes, and the way I meant that was, I think that it'll be difficult to get another major stimulus program passed. Whether it should be there or not, I'm not making a comment about that. But I think the jobless rate is going to steady and stay. Mike's prediction again. I like Mike's presentation yesterday. I thought that was pretty much right. It'll steady down to the 9% range, and like the last recovery and the earlier thing, I don't think it's going to go down much from there. And one of the reasons I don't think so, no matter what we do on stimulus, is that there's a huge amount of capacity worldwide. I mean, we've been focusing on the U.S. But if you look at global capacity, it's unbelievably large, both in employment and in industrial capacity. So I think that there's going to be a natural, and if the dollar doesn't collapse, then I have a feeling that that's going to be a natural break on any major cutting into the jobless rate.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Maynard. So if there is additional stimulus, we're already hearing California's heading to D.C. to bail them out, and so who knows what's next. The fear there and the challenge then is that our federal government does increase its debt even more. And so the what will happen there, as I want to make sure I understand this right, is that what could happen then is that could lead to a spike in interest rates, and which would further hamper the housing recovery. Is that correct?
Mr. Mayor.
That, to the chair, that is clearly one of the fears. On the other hand, by the way, my own personal view, you should be very happy. Our portfolio isn't positioned on me being right or wrong on any of these individual issues. This is why I'm glad I have people that I get to fire in case they get it wrong rather than me. But the issue is that the question is also timing. I remember 10 years ago, the whole capital markets were so worried because of the budget surpluses were going to wipe out the U.S. Treasury market in 5 or 6 years. I mean, I think over a 2 or 3 year period, it's an issue of being more concerned about what's right in front of you. I think the issues you're raising are very true over 10 years. The biggest issue on interest rates spiking, by the way, as your question implies, is not the short end. The short end is pretty much under some control by the Federal Reserve. It's the long end that we're not sure about. And the problem is right now 60% of our debt is held by foreign governments, 30% by China, 20%, well, about, by Japan. Back in the 60s and 70s, only 12% of our debt was held by foreigners. Now, on the other hand, China cannot afford to sell our debt, because if that happens, the dollar crashes, and they have a revolution on their hands because we take away all their export markets, and there's nobody to buy their goods from here. They become too expensive. So we're in this weird period of time where we have a stability based on mutual dependence. So all I can give you is factors. The chain you brought up is one chain that could happen. I'm not sure it's the only one.
Senator Baer, this is probably the last question. Go ahead.
Thank you for your kindness, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Maynard, I'm impressed with what you've done with the portfolio. But I have a question on a different venue, and I don't know whether you can answer this or not, but I'm curious if you can quantify dollar-wise how much the capital markets affect revenues into the state.
Mr. Maynard.
Mike Ferguson has that number to, I believe, the cent. So I'll leave that to Mike to give. No, I'm not, it's, I don't know. I'll try to think about that, and I'll talk to Mike about a way to quantify that. By the way, on all of this, and I know this is the last question, I'm a cheap date. I buy the coffee. If you're ever bored in the afternoon, give a call. I'll buy whatever designer coffee. And the problem on this stuff is this is as much fun as I have talking about this stuff. So I thank you again for the time, and please don't hesitate to call for a cup of coffee.
And Mr. Maynard, I think I read in the paper this morning the Chinese did raise their interest rates today.
Yes. Senator and Chairman, they have a potential inflation problem. They have to find a way to slow down their growth, particularly in certain areas, without collapsing the economy. Their issue is a bit different. The one thing they have going for them is they have all that surplus to be able to spend. But that's why if they goof that up, I start worrying.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Director Dietrich, welcome to the committee, sir.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Senator Getty, Representative Baer, members of the committee. It's great to be in front of you again. As I reviewed and prepared my notes for this presentation, I looked back on what I had reported last year and realized that many of my comments will seem redundant. However, perhaps this year I can offer a glimmer of good news as Idaho continues to push towards recovery. From my perspective, the economy remains flat. We really are not seeing a whole lot of activity, particularly from a recruitment standpoint. The primary drivers today are tight credit markets, lack of consumer confidence, and fiscal fever. And now fiscal fever in this case refers to deficit spending policies and the anticipated impact it will have on taxes. At state level, deficit spending is a zero-sum game, and corporate America is waiting for the bill. Today, fiscal fever is contributing to the corporate decision freeze that we're dealing with. However, the fiscal responsibility that Idaho's leadership has insisted on will prove to be an ally in our recruitment efforts down the road. Corporate America seeks stability and predictability. The credit markets continue to be of concern, enough so that just 2 days ago, the governor held a finance summit in an effort to directly engage with our financial institutions on what can be done to better serve our state's businesses. While domestic deal closure across the nation remains light, we are seeing encouraging activity on the international front. The Asian and select other economies are starting to grow again. Idaho's exports are starting to gain steam. Fueled by the weak dollar, and international parent companies are pumping money into Idaho's subsidiary expansion projects. Idaho is a bargain today. Governor Otter's Project 60 has provided the framework that the Department of Commerce has based its strategic and divisional work plans on. My comments are structured in Project 60 format. So that basically means we'll look at it systemically, we'll look at it from a domestic recruitment standpoint, and we'll look at it from an international engagement. The department's number one priority remains servicing our Idaho communities and existing businesses. And I can tell you I personally spend about 40% of my time working with existing companies to help them grow and more frequently just to stay in business. We've had several systemic successes this year in an effort to assist Idaho companies. In September, Commerce was successful in securing a USCIS approval for a statewide EB-5 regional investment center. The federal EB-5 program is a tool to attract foreign capital, and we clearly have got our sights set on attracting a certain amount of foreign capital into our markets. We are working with some additional EB-5 centers as well that currently have applications in. Commerce has continued to work with small innovative companies to help them secure federal research grants. I'm happy to report that in calendar year 2009, 10 Idaho companies received Phase 1 Small Business Innovation Research Grants, or SBIR, federal awards and loan guarantees totaling over $103 million. We anticipate many of these Phase 1 awards will lead to larger Phase 2 awards and continued success in securing federal grants for innovative companies producing products for national security and green energy-related industries. The Idaho Procurement and Technical Assistance Center, managed by the Department of Commerce, has had a very busy year working with a record number of Idaho companies to secure federal government contracts. Awards from October 2008 to September 2009 doubled from the previous year. Idaho companies received $180 million in prime and subcontract awards. Our assistance center will continue to aggressively educate companies in that area, and we can expect to see considerably more contracting going on given the level of federal spending at this point. In working with our rural communities to improve their infrastructure needs through federal and state grant funds, we've seen several distinct trends this past year. Requests for job creation state funds have decreased due to the nationwide recession, and these are basically our state grant funds that we typically have administered. There are simply fewer relocation and expansion projects taking place by way of down, so as a result, we're seeing fewer of the requests for those funds. Even though our rural areas are not requesting job creation state grant funds, it appears that several cities are trying to create an economic spark by way of downtown improvement projects. And we are seeing an increase in federal grant funding at this point. The application demand for 2010 is currently sitting at $7.9 million with an additional $1.5 million in demand expected. So most of those are really related to downtown improvement projects. The second most frequently requested use of those funds is economic development. So our tourism industry experienced a drop in activity of just over 7% in fiscal year 09 compared to our record fiscal year 08 tourism collections. To date, in fiscal year 10, we are experiencing an additional decline of 11%. We're cautiously optimistic that we will begin to see a rebound and an increase in visitor traffic starting in fiscal year 11. Our assumptions for growth in fiscal year 11 are based on forecasts from the U.S. Travel Association, indicating a modest recovery in leisure visitation and spending in calendar year 2010. International visitation also shows gains, but is not expected to return to previous highs until 2013. The U.S. Has implemented a visa waiver program, and we're starting to see the impact of that in the number of Koreans that are traveling to the U.S., and I think we'll get our fair share of those type of visitors. And Idaho does expect to get a certain amount of pass-through traffic on their way to Vancouver in the Winter Olympics, so that will also provide a little bit of an uptick. Domestically, the second tier of Project 60 for Commerce is our effort to recruit companies. Now, here's some of the good news. Our pipeline today is 105 companies. We've got a huge pipeline, record pipeline. And so a lot of that is due diligence that's actually being conducted. And now to contrast that, we had 23 companies in our pipeline when I reported to you last year. So we have had a significant number of companies that are starting to focus on us. We've had about a 48% conversion rate from lead into project in 2009, and we conducted 19 site visits. So we've got a lot of activity going on out there. Now, generally, the department's recruitment projects remain off the radar, and so to speak, until we're permitted to announce them. We have an incredibly unique project underway right now here in the state that involves both Mountain Home Air Force Base and Gowan Field. Both facilities are on the Air Force shortlist of potential locations to win bed-down missions for the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter. We'd like to think we're in the running for up to a total of 6 squadrons. Now, an estimated 500 jobs per squadron, plus construction and supply contracts, this is a big deal. It is a big deal by any measure. The impact on state and local economies could be sizable. Commerce has teamed with a broad range of interested parties to win these missions, and you'll be hearing a lot more about that soon. So it's just a great project. It's one that we can actually talk about. The size of our pipeline tells me many of the domestic companies are looking to escape challenging operating cost environments, while our foreign component sees an opportunity to expand. We're still running about 30% foreign as far as our pipeline is concerned, our inbound pipeline. And we're seeing a tremendous amount of interest from companies from states that are having particularly difficult times financially and expected to see some tax increases in those areas. The top industries expressing interest in Idaho are traditional manufacturing, energy-related manufacturing, and we have seen an uptick in the number of call centers. And I think some of that is in response to areas like in Twin Falls where we had the Dell exit. We've got, when the facilities open up, we've got a great workforce here. We're recognized for that, and we do see an uptick in the number of those type of businesses. Unfortunately, in 2009, we were only able to land 3 fairly small projects. 8 larger projects were lost for a number of reasons, including availability of facilities, access to suppliers, power needs, tax policy, incentives, specific workforce needs, and one of the biggest ones in my book is airline routes. Oftentimes, we just have to go somewhere else to get somewhere else, and that's a real difficult part of our overall equation. Now, internationally, our international participation has become a very significant part of what we do at Commerce. Money continues to flow internationally, and our focus remains on those areas that there is actually activity that we can pursue. The weak dollar has also provided some new opportunities, both from an export standpoint and basically the flow of money, and particularly in China, and Bob mentioned that earlier. We are seeing some privatization take place in China. It has left some of their major corporations with money that they truly do not at this point know where to put that money. And so we are dealing with several of those companies and looking for opportunities to create some investment opportunity here at home. Last year was a record year for Idaho exports. Last year was a record year, and that was $5 billion. Through the third quarter of 2009, Idaho exports were valued at $2.75 billion, down 30% from the same period a year ago. On the bright side, based on quarterly data trends, we're cautiously forecasting that Idaho exports will be down approximately 20%, or $1 billion, for calendar year 2009. A significant improvement from the first quarter of 2009 when Idaho exports were down more than 38%. So we were really in a deep hole. Still are in a hole, but we're improving. Now, even though Idaho exports have taken a significant hit when compared to our all-time record of 2008, the last two quarters have put us well ahead of the U.S. export recovery pace. So we actually are recovering at a much quicker pace than the U.S. overall. We've directed our trade offices to focus their resources on not only trade, but investment promotion. Idaho's key partners are still located in the Pacific Rim countries. 7 of 10 Idaho top export destinations are Asian countries. Our international trade and investment strategy remains focused on these countries and where Idaho maintains international offices. We have several areas that we are focusing on, but we are making some real inroads, I think, both in the area of forest products. We've got a lot of effort going into our forest products industries right now, both in Asia and in Mexico, and we also are working significant potential deals with the mining industry, particularly in Mexico. So we've got some great traction starting to take place, I think, in certain areas of the world. And many of our companies, our Idaho-based companies, are participating with us. So to sum it up, the money that is flowing for investment is currently coming from the international markets. And until that trend changes, we'll continue to maintain a strong focus internationally. I believe that Idaho has a number of strengths that will carry us out of this recession, including low cost of operating, skilled and available workforce, fiscally responsible and accessible government, safe communities, and an excellent quality of life. They are those qualities that that the companies that we're dealing with are walking through the door and asking for. And so that is something that we can provide. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there's a lot of work ahead. We're ready to attack that and continue to work in that direction. I thank you very much. I'm welcome to answer any questions.
Thank you, Director. And we're up against the Governor's press conference, so could you come back for questions following the press conference?
Sure.
Committee will recess until 9:15. The press conference, I believe, is in the big Senate or the big committee room on the Senate side. Oh, and we're going to come back to room EW40 rather than this room, where we have the projectors working.
Mr. Chairman, during the break, Margaret and I will move all of your materials over to the room next door.
Thank you.
You've got the right location.